Hello everyone. Can everyone hear me? Okay, I assume so. So what I will talk about is actually a detection of a planet. And the reason I'm talking about it here is because, as you'll see, the technique, which is rather new, has a lot in common with astroseismic analysis. So it will be of interest, at least to the observer, and hopefully for all of you. And actually, the specific star I will talk about, one of the surprising results, at least for me, is the possibility that that planet host star is pulsating. Okay, so this is the light curve, this is the transit, and you see here even the occultation, which is a secondary eclipse when the planet goes behind the star. It's a very short period, very bright star, and it's an A-type star, temperature of about 8500 plus minus a few hundred. So you see here a very clear variability along the orbit. This is the entire orbit. So my naive question is, can we detect this system or this planet only with this photometry along the orbit, without the transit and occultation? What this actually means, can we detect non-transiting or non-eclipsing systems exactly like this one? Because from simple geometry, if there is one transiting system like this one, there is an order of 10 which are not transiting. So what is this variability along the orbit? Well, there are three mechanisms, or we call them effects. The last two, ellipsoidal and reflection, were observed for many years for many, many binary stars. The first one, the beaming, is a bit new, and I'll say a few words about that. So this is an attempt to visualize what is going on when an object is moving on a certain velocity towards the observer, and turns out you don't really need relativistic velocities for this. Photons emitted in the forward direction are blue shifted, but they are also beamed a little, meaning more photons per unit angle in the forward direction compared to the backward direction. This is the equation to go from the emitted to the observed frame. And you see that the effect is linear at v over c. And if you take v to be the radial velocity amplitude of an object, say in a binary system, you see that you can follow the orbit with photometry instead of the traditional radial velocities, but you need very accurate photometry for this and continuous along the entire orbit. So this is again an overview of the three effects. And if we take the beaming, this is a schematic light curve. If we take the beaming to be a sine function, this is the phase of transit or inferior conjunction for a non-eclipsing system. So ellipsoidal will be a cosine function, of course, at half the orbital period or the first harmonic, and reflection will be again a cosine function at the orbital period. So you see that all three effects have the same period or the first harmonic of that period, but they are shifted in phase relative to each other. So we want to use this to detect non-eclipsing systems, but of course we don't know the period. Even the period is not known if there are no eclipses. So this is the subject of the BEER algorithm, which is initials for beaming, ellipsoidal, and reflection. It's also a very good name. So it's a two-step approach. First, we fit a double harmonic model for every trial period, and we get a periodogram. And then in the second step, we choose the best period, and we shift the phase in order to zero out this fourth sinusoidal component, because this one does not have any corresponding physical effect. And after this shift, each of the first three has a one-to-one correspondence with one of the three physical effects. So back to our interesting system. By detection, I mean two things. We want to get the ephemeris, but also the minimum mass, just like we get from radial velocity. So I used this transiting system as a test case for the Beer approach. I ignored or cut out the transit and occultation data, and then I just applied the algorithm just to see what I can get. So this is the light curve up until Q5. I ignored Q0 and 1 because they're too noisy. I also had to ignore Q4 because some problems with the data. Of course, the transit and occultation data are thrown away in this light curve, which is almost 20% of the data is ignored. And just note the y-axis here, it's in parts per million. And this is the zoom in on 10 days of real data, real long cadence Kepler data. You can already see this, the variability here, which is very clear even before folding the data. So again, this is a double harmonic model. We fit for every trial period, and this is the periodogram. It's a very, very clear detection of the orbital period. And almost every of these smaller peaks that you can see are associated with that orbital period. And we get the ephemeris, which is, as expected, very consistent with the one from the Borucki paper, which is, of course, based also on the transit data. So we have the ephemeris, but we want also the minimum mass. So this is the expression for the beaming photometric amplitude. We isolate n sin I, and we see it is dependent on several parameters. Orbital period, well, we have that. Photometric beaming amplitude, we also have that. And we also need an estimate of the stellar mass. We also need to estimate this coefficient, alpha beaming, which depends on the target's spectrum. So we assume it's a black body and take the effective temperature. And this is the mass I got, about 9 Jupiter mass. So this is a massive planet orbiting in a short period, a very hot star. Keep in mind, this is actually a transiting system. So sin I is very close to 1. And this is a photometric mass measurement. No radial velocities are going into this estimate. So here is the phase for the light curve. The long cadence data are in the background. The black circles are the binned folded light curve. And this is a breakdown for each of the three effects with the fitted amplitude of each of the effects. So you can immediately see the beaming is much, much smaller than the other two, which is as expected for such a short period. And here are the actual fitted amplitudes. The signs minus for reflection and ellipsoidal, it is again as expected from the very way this model is defined. Take a look at the error bars, about half a part per million, and these error bars are already accounting for some correlated or red noise in the Kepler data. So now that we have some kind of estimate, what is the accuracy of the Kepler data? Based on 3 Kepler quarters, we can extrapolate what will be the sensitivity of this method once in about a year from now, we will have 3.5 years of Kepler data. And we can plot the sensitivity diagram. This is log-log scale of mass versus orbital period. I'm assuming here a 7 sigma detection. So it could be a conservative approach. Inclination of 60, rather arbitrarily, just to show these are non-transiting systems. The solid lines are for the very bright stars in the Kepler field, which will be sensitive to 2 parts per million modulations. And the dashed lines are for stars which are much, much fainter, very close to the faint end of the Kepler magnitude range, which is about 15. So the amplitude will be about 20 parts per million. And the way to look at this diagram is that the lines show us the smallest mass we can detect. And anything above the lines is detected easier or with a higher significance. And of course, KY13 can be detected even for faint stars. So first, we can detect systems, non-transiting systems, exactly like KY13, but for bright stars and short period systems, we can detect companions all the way down to almost one Jupiter mass. So this is the periodogram, and my initial motivation was to say, okay, we have this periodicity, let's remove it, and then look for other planets. And they do it regularly in radial velocity. So I removed that periodicity, and this is the residuous periodogram. And there is very significant peaks here, and this is at 1.06 days. And the very same periodicity was detected in another paper, and a week ago there was even a third paper which detected this periodicity. So when I saw these other papers, I was really sure that, okay, this is real, I didn't inject it by mistake. So what is this periodicity? So first, this is the folded light curve of the 1.06 days, amplitude of 10 or maybe 20 parts per million, and it is very unlikely to be a second planet. Just think about one planet at 1.76 days, and a massive one, and then another one at this period. It doesn't seem right. There are other considerations that show this is probably not a second planet. So what is this? The period ratio with the orbital period is almost exactly integer. So that raises the possibility of some kind of pulsation which are induced by some kind of interaction between the planet and the star. So to test this, we want to look at other similar systems. So it turns out there's only one system, with a transiting system, which has an A star host, and this is WASP-33. And turns out the system, the star is also pulsating in several ways, actually. And those systems are very, very similar. Not only they have an A-type host star, but also the period is very short. The period of WASP-33 is 1.2 days. And even more than that, both systems show spin orbit misalignment, meaning the spin axis or the rotation axis of the star is misaligned with the orbital angular momentum axis of the planet. So this is 2 out of 2, basically. So it could be that something is going on here. It could be that we are seeing some new group of planets, but unfortunately detecting planets around A stars is very difficult. Another possibility for this integer ratio came from a paper which appeared a week ago on Astro-PH, saying some kind of a spin orbit resonance, but it also says there is some kind of interaction between the planet and the star. So I'll finish with some kind of like political preaching, but in this crowd I'm preaching to the choir. So all the sensitivities that I've shown you before, they can all be, of course, much, much better once we have the extended mission. And in a few months, NASA will decide whether they extend the Kepler mission based on the senior review, and I hope they will make the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Avi. Questions? Yes, Robert?
Thank you very much. One thing that we should mention here, that the host star of this KOI-13 is a rapidly rotating A star. And we have heard about that earlier this week. And that's how we found, actually, to be interesting, this system, because the transit itself is actually distorted. And that's because of the gravitational darkening. So that was our explanation. So we can actually map the surface of the stars with the help of a transit. That's an independent method. So we don't need the usual interferometry. So that's very interesting.
This is the asymmetry in the transit. This transit is asymmetric.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The reflection term, you didn't talk about it, but that gives you the albedo of the planet, or if you assume the albedo of the planet, it gives you the inclination.
It turns out it's even more interesting than that, and that was discussed in the Mazze paper I mentioned. I didn't look at the secondary eclipse, but they did. And it turns out the secondary is, the amplitude is larger than the reflection amplitude. So there is more information there. And they did a very nice analysis, and I just refer you to that paper.
Could you show the folded light curve again with the original 1.7 tape here? If I looked at that, I would say it's systematically off.
Like over here and maybe over
yeah,
here.
But it's sort of asymmetric from the two sides have asymmetric residuals.
Yeah.
Is that due to the other period? It just seems like that. What is that? What's causing that?
That is due to, first, keep in mind, it's a very, very simplistic model, just taking a double harmonic model. It's not a real physical model. So it's not surprising that there will be some deviations that will look like systematics. And actually, we already took all the Kepler data up until Q8, and we still see these systematic deviations. So my answer is that, yeah, something more is going on in the system, but we haven't modeled it yet. So this is not a problem, it's an opportunity.
I mean, on the same lines, there's a number of cases now where they have a very, very strong offset of the light curve with the transits, which they interpret as hotspots on the planet, which are not facing the star. And so there's a phase lag between the two. And that's another really interesting thing to get out of the data, if you can do this, which would be fantastic, is have a scan
like
for
normal. Yeah, like they saw with Spitzer for HD819, the Knudsen paper. Yeah, so this could be one of the things that is going on here. We didn't test this interesting scenario yet.
Okay, final question.
So for ellipsoidal, usually you have widely separated systems, and so you just keep the quadrupole component of the tide, and that gives you something at twice the orbital frequency. But if you're only at a few stellar radii away, then the higher multipole is only smaller by a factor of 3. So we'll say, so do you see evidence of those higher signals in the data? Or? At higher frequencies?
Yeah, I completely agree. And as I said, this is a very simplistic model. It is actually meant for detection and not detailed physical characterization.
Thank you. Let's thank Avi again. We move to Vicky Antocci, who will tell us all about solar-like oscillations in a delta Scudi star.